and he pretends her dignity gone. Then his face twisted in pain, but she pushed her daughter away.
I'm sorry, sweetling. Forgive me.
Returning to Captain Draper's room, she shut the door and replaced the bar on the privacy ward. Then she sat down and began to write. It wasn't easy, and she had to use the sand to clean up not only the occasional ink blot, but the spots made by her tears as well. She spent a half an hour on it before giving up, not because she couldn't think of anything else to say, but because there was too much. She could never write it all, and she was growing tired.
My time is running out.
Penny returned to the bed and lay down, covering herself as well as Mordecai's body with the blanket. She pressed her lips to his before withdrawing from her body. It was the most she could do. Then she focused on the tiny spark left within her chest and began to pull. A searing pain unlike anything she could remember burned through her, but she refused to give up. In the end, she thought she'd succeeded, but she wasn't certain. Perhaps Mordecai would be able to tell. Penny turned her thoughts to her husband, and her only regret was that she couldn't do more. I woke to find Penny's cold lips against mine. Had we succeeded? With one hand I reached over to brush her hair from her face, and then I knew. She was cold, not just her lips, but everywhere. Her heart was no longer beating.
No!
I screamed until I ran out of air, and then I gathered her lifeless body into my arms, cradling her against me.
Why? Why did you do this? If it had to be one of us, it should have been me.
I wanted to break something. No, I wanted to break everything. Rage filled me, and for a moment I fought to contain myself. In the end, I did nothing but cry, sobbing like a child with a broken doll. My life was over. Nothing had any meaning anymore. Paralyzed, I spent an hour refusing to leave the bed, holding the empty shell of the person that had been everything to me. Exhausted by my emotions, I wanted to sleep, but even that was denied to me. Disgusted by my own helplessness, I left the bed, but after only a single step, I felt myself drawn back. How can I leave her? I wanted to die, and if I'd had the courage, I might have found a way to join her. But Irene needed me. So did my other children. A lot of other people did too, but at that particular moment, I didn't give a damn about anyone beyond my own family. This can't be happening. But it was. It had happened, and I was left to pick up the pieces. How would I explain this? How could they forgive me? Can I even forgive myself? From the corner of my eye, I spotted a sheet of parchment on the side table. I ignored it, staring back down at Penny, but it lingered in the back of my mind. It hadn't been there when I first entered the room. Turning around, I went to the table and snatched it up, impatient to see what it was. My privacy ward was still around the room. The door was still locked and barred. No one else could have come in, so whatever it was, it must have been her. My eyes blurred as I began to read.
Mordecai, I am truly sorry. I hope you will forgive me, but I have done what I thought was for the best. I tried to do what you wanted, but I discovered the truth of my condition, something you probably knew but tried to ignore. Healthy body or not, I wasn't long for this world. I can only imagine that this secret must have tormented you. I wish you told me that we could have talked, but when I imagine our roles reversed, I'm not sure if I would have been able to tell you. So I'm letting you off the hook for that one. That means you owe me one, so you can't stay mad at me for this. I wish I could see you. Are you angry? Maybe. One way or another, I'm sure you're hurting. If it were possible, I'd hold you and try my best to ease your pain. Since I can't, you're going to have to find a way to go on. You probably don't think you can, but I know you better than you know yourself. If it can be done, you can do it. Our children are depending on you. But please, don't just think of them. As wonderful a man as you are, I know how selfish you can be, especially when you're hurting. Don't forget about the people who depend on us. Do your best for them. Promise me you'll remain the man I fell in love with, the man who always worked hard to protect those who depend on him.
With a strangled cry, I dropped the paper, choking on a lump in my throat. How can I do that without you? Several minutes passed before I was able to pick the page up and begin reading again.
These have been the best years of my life. We created a wonderful family, and my only regret is not being able to remain with you and them for a lot longer. Please apologize to Irene for me. She saw me before I left, and I'm sure she's distraught. I told her what I was doing, but she may take her anger out on you. Give her time. Matthew, Moira, and Connell, I don't know how they'll react. Tell them I love them. In the years ahead, you'll have to tell them that and more. Tell them all the things I would have. You know my heart as well as I do. I trust they'll do well. They have to. Besides, they have the best father in the world to guide them. Don't be too hard on yourself. It's one of your worst habits. Don't beat yourself up. We have plenty of enemies still. Don't do their job for them. I'll make you regret it if you don't find some way to be happy. There's a lot more to say, but there's no way to write it all. Don't feel bad for me. In a way, I'm the luckiest woman in the world. Most people die alone, but I'm not dying, not really. Call me selfish, but I couldn't let go of you, not completely. I like to think I'll live on, inside your heart. One more time from your stubborn wife. I love you. Farewell, Penelope. P.S. Don't forget to make sure someone lets Humphrey out for his walks. He's just starting to get better about his mistakes. I don't want him to get back into bad habits.
That was just like her. The last word was a reminder to make sure I took care of the dog. I stared at the page. Did you really think I'd forget about him? I was smiling through my tears, but the smile only lasted a brief time. The sadness went on. I folded up the parchment, and after putting my clothes back on, I tucked it into my pouch. Then I turned to the door. I had to go out and face the world.
Chapter 39.
The look on Irene's face when I emerged broke my heart, not because of anything dramatic. It was the quiet resignation displayed there that tore at me, a brief flash of hope, quickly replaced by hopeless acceptance when she saw me step out. She didn't ask any questions or offer condolences. Instead, she pointed at the far wall.
The worst are on that side. I've done the best I could, but I don't know what more to do for them.
I nodded and headed over to check those patients. I thought Irene would follow me, but she started for the door leading out of the barracks. Wait, I told her.
I've been in here for hours,
she replied without meeting my eyes.
I need to check on the men working outside.
Observe me for the first few, I insisted. As rough as it is, this is the best opportunity for you to learn, for the future. She stared back silently for a few seconds, and then gave a faint nod. The men along the wall were in bad shape, but I found some solace by throwing myself into my work. I could feel my daughter's attention, and occasionally her aethar as she followed along, watching me carefully as I tended to the injured. She had already sealed their cuts and fused their broken bones, but these men needed more. Some of them had fragments of bone that needed to be removed. The body will absorb them with time, I commented as I went. But if there are too many, it can cause strange bouts of hysteria after a day or two. For others, I drained blood and fluids that had accumulated within the body. The reasoning is similar here. If the body has to break down all this blood, it will delay healing and can damage the kidneys. In a few cases, she connected veins to arteries instead of with their own kind, causing problems with circulation. It was also apparent that she didn't have much of a grasp of anatomy, for she hadn't attempted to reconnect muscles and ligaments. I pointed those out and kept working. Irene took it all in without a word, and after an hour, I let her leave. When I finally left the barracks, many hours later, I found a large field tent had been set up in the main courtyard. Bedrolls were laid out, and some of the men were resting, while others were laboring over cooking fires. Irene had been working steadily, excavating portions of the collapsed keep, primarily the storerooms where most of the food was kept. We were cut off from Washbrook, since we couldn't open the shield gate that connected the town to the castle, and with most of the keep being unusable, the tent was necessary to give people shelter to sleep. The damage to the keep had done much more than ruin the control chamber, preventing us from lowering the shield barrier. It had destroyed our family apartments. That wasn't such a big loss, since we didn't actually live in them, but it had also destroyed the portal that led to our hidden mountain home. The only way in or out of the castle was via the teleport circles in the transfer house. Washbrook had a similar problem, so it was obvious that my first priority was to re-establish control over the shield barrier. Before I could start, Captain Draper approached me.
My lord, have you eaten yet?
I have no appetite, I answered woodenly.
You must eat to...
How many did we lose? I asked, cutting him off before he could lecture me. The captain stood straighter as he answered me.
47 men and women. 28 of those were guardsmen, and 19 were servants within the keep.
That was easy enough to tell he wasn't saying everything. How many of those were children? After a pause, he replied,
4, my lord. Many more would have died if it weren't for your daughter delaying the collapse.
I'll want a list of their names, once we're past the worst of this, I noted.
If I may ask, my lord, how are the wounded?
There was a strong undercurrent of anxiety in his question. Your son will recover, I said, answering the question he truly wanted to ask. Perry's wounds were serious, but nothing that will limit him in the future. Give him a month or two, and he'll be back in the training yard making fools out of his fellow soldiers again. Captain Draper gave out a strange coughing grunt, turning his head to one side so I couldn't see his face. When he composed himself again, he spoke up.
Thank you, my lord.
Don't thank me, I said. I'm told your son was very brave. He earned great honor for your family, and I'm grateful to still have him. You raised him well.
I have another question, Your Excellency, and I apologize for the necessity.
My captain of the guard hesitated. Spit it out, Carl, I prompted him.
The Countess, what should I do about...
Her body, I finished silently.
Damn it.
Nothing. I'll handle it. I've been avoiding the thought since I'd left the captain's room hours ago. I left him there and returned to where I'd left her. It wasn't fair to keep the captain's room occupied when beds were in short supply. She was still as I'd left her, still and peaceful in her repose, with a blanket tucked over her as though she might simply be resting after a hard day. With my power, I levitated her body and took her into the main barracks, trying to decide where she should go. Ordinarily, I would have used one of the spare rooms in the keep for her, but that was obviously not possible. Finally, I decided on the gatehouse. Summoning a cloud to shield us from the eyes of my people, I walked her to the bailey and carried her up the stairs to one of the rooms above the gate and portcullis. Then I rearranged the blanket to cover her face and drew a set of crystalline cubes from my belt pouch. A touch of Aethar and they flew apart, forming a rectangle around her floating form. Another touch, and a surge of Aethar activated the enchantment, encasing Penny's cold flesh in a field of golden light. The stasis field kept her suspended there, unchanging, even after I'd withdrawn my power. It would keep her pure and uncorrupted for as long as necessary, until my family had returned, until we could lay her to rest. It was some time before I was able to compose myself again, but when I had, I left to seek out what remained of the control chamber inside the ruins of the keep. There was work to be done, and no one else to do it. My work was undisturbed through the rest of the afternoon and late into the night. Ordinarily, I would have expected a long succession of questions from Captain Draper and others during such a crisis, but they never approached me. In the background of my mind, I sensed Irene's Aethar as she moved from place to place, answering the people's concerns and giving the orders that were necessary. I finished reconstructing the control pedestal sometime after midnight. Outside, the courtyard had gone silent, for most of the men had gone to sleep earlier. Though it was cold, I didn't seek a blanket. Instead, I voiced a spell and wrapped myself in a warm bubble of air before leaning against one of the intact walls. Alone, I stared into the darkness, wishing for sleep. Eventually, my exhaustion, mental and physical, won out, and I descended into a deep slumber. Chapter 40. I woke with the sun shining in my eyes. My spellful warmth had mostly faded, but I wasn't cold. At some point someone had tucked a bedroll between my back and the wall and covered me with a blanket. That someone was leaning against me, her head against my chest. What would I do without you always looking out for me? I thought, forgetting for a moment that the person I was thinking of wasn't with me anymore. My chest ached as I realized it was Irene beside me. I should have realized sooner. Her hair was a lighter shade of brown, and she was still considerably smaller than her mother. I fought to keep my chest from heaving. I didn't want to wake her. Irene had been working just as hard as I had, and she needed her sleep. She should be in a warm bed, not sleeping on hard stone next to me. Careful to move slowly, I began to shift her head, trying to get up without waking her, but Irene's eyes popped open anyway. For a half minute, we just stared at each other, and I could see the knowledge of the previous day filtering into her mind as the cloudy dreams of night dissipated.
"I'm sorry."
Those were her first words. I squeezed her. "You don't have anything to be sorry for."
"She asked me not to be angry with you yesterday. I know it wasn't your fault, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't face you."
"Shh, it's fine," I said soothingly. Neither of us was in any shape to talk. You did the most important things. After a brief pause, I added, "You spoke to her."
"Mm-hmm,"
said Irene, the pitch of her reply rising as she tried to keep from crying. Neither of us could go on, so we sat silently for a short time, and then we stood up and brushed ourselves off. Words could come later, and they weren't so damned hard to say. The sun was up, and I could hear the sounds of people moving around outside. Another day of hard labor was already in progress. I hadn't lowered the shield the night before because there hadn't been much point with everyone asleep. Plus, I'd felt safer sleeping with it active. I remedied that now, testing the new links between the repaired pedestal and the enchantment. It worked, and I felt the subtle vibration of the shield barrier vanish. With the barrier down, people began moving back and forth between the castle yard and Washbrook. The air was filled with the sound of people talking loudly back and forth, as well as the grief-stricken cries of the families of those who'd fallen. When I stepped into the courtyard, a silence fell, and people began to gather around me, questions on their faces. Irene, young as she was, stepped in front of me and opened her mouth, preparing to speak. "Try to protect your father," I thought. She continued to surprise me. I placed a hand on her shoulder and shook my head. "You've done more than you should. Let me." Then I straightened to address the crowd. Among the faces, I could see Sisyan and Chag Grayson watching me expectantly. I guessed that they'd been trapped in Washbrook. "We have been dealt a terrible wound. Many of you have lost friends and loved ones, and I know you have questions. I have some of the answers, as well as questions of my own. The monsters that attacked us are ancient and inhuman. The attack here was a response to my temerity in challenging them. I underestimated them, and our loved ones have paid the price for my hubris. Many died, among them my own dear wife, your countess. I cannot bring them back. Nothing I can say will fill the void in our hearts. Nothing will atone for this. The best I can offer you is my vow to bring justice to the enemy that has done this. I believe I've already eliminated the majority of the enemy's forces, but I have no doubt they will recover. To prevent a repeat of yesterday's tragedy, I will step up my efforts to make certain our homes, your homes, are safe. I will continue to hunt the remnants of our mutual foe. Beyond this, I have nothing to offer you. I have made many mistakes over the years, and many have suffered for them, though this is perhaps the deepest wound yet. History has shown that I'm a failure when it comes to protecting my own, but there is one thing I've never failed at. You will have vengeance," I finished. A familiar voice, deep and masculine, answered from the crowd. "I like the sound of that, though I have serious doubts about your ability to make good on your words." People hurried to distance themselves from the speaker, and as the space grew, I saw Tyrion standing amidst them. I'd sealed his Aethar tightly so that he appeared to be an ordinary man, but he released the block as he threw back the hood of his cloak. His presence fell like a shadow across the crowd, causing people to gasp as they subconsciously felt the weight of his aethar expand. The crowd parted as he walked toward me. Tyrion Eleniel, the first wizard, stopped a few feet from me, a mocking sneer on his lips.
You speak of vengeance, but you're a child playing at a man's game. Why should these people trust you?
Irene, already grief-stricken and worn, reacted before I could reply. She stepped forward and her hand flew up to slap the stranger insulting her father. Tyrion batted her hand away and swept the back of his fist at her, but it stopped in mid-swing, caught by my power.
Touch my daughter and die, I warned him.
The air shimmered as he tested my strength, his will wrestling my own. Staring into his eyes, I felt my rage climbing, and the ground began to tremble as the earth reacted to our anger.
You should teach your cub how to fight before she gets herself into trouble baring her teeth at strangers, observed Tyrion, with a look of mad intensity in his eyes. And you should learn when to shut your fucking mouth, swore Chad behind him.
The hunter stood a few feet away, his bow drawn and one of the enchanted war arrows knocked. Sion stood on Tyrion's other side, blade in hand, his body tense with suppressed violence. My ancestor smiled.
I could kill both of you in the span of a heartbeat.
Then he relaxed, releasing his power and ending our battle of wills.
Try it, growled the ranger,
but I held up my hand to forestall him before he could say more.
I did not come here to fight, announced Tyrion.
You announce your intentions poorly, then, I remarked disdainfully. The people have suffered a great hurt and our blood runs hot. Tempers are frayed. You should consider your manners if you wish to avoid a tragic misunderstanding. Tyrion laughed, but there was nothing pleasant about the sound.
I could say the same to you. Learn to control your children or there might be bloodshed when none is desired. Where are your other offspring? I'm surprised your entire brood isn't here assaulting me.
The possible implications of his words made my blood run cold.
Does he know? Were they caught?
The wrong response could give them away unless he'd already caught them.
They're away, dealing with other matters, I said neutrally. Hopefully they're better trained than this one, mocked Tyrion, his eyes flicking toward Irene. It would be terrible if something ill befell them.
Is that a threat? I asked tensely. My ancestor's face changed as confusion flickered across his features for a second. He had sensed the incipient violence behind my words, and it surprised him.
No, he answered. I came today to offer my help, and perhaps my advice as well, though I doubt you will heed it.
He doesn't know, I realized. If he had, he wouldn't have been surprised, and he wouldn't have made that last remark without following it with a more direct threat.
Help, I questioned, letting my own surprise show.
Tyrion nodded.
With your enemy, the ancient enemy of the Shi'ar, the ones who attacked your home. You said you will exact vengeance on them. I have the means to make your wish come true.
My first impulse was to demand how he intended to do that, but as my anger cooled, I realized we still had a rather large audience.
Let's talk about this elsewhere.
Tyrion arched one brow, glancing at my ruined castle.
Where do you suggest?
The one place left that can show you the proper hospitality, I answered. Then I turned to Sion.
Stay with Irene. Guard her life with your own. Until I return, her word is law.
Glancing at Chad, I added, come with me. You can help me introduce our guest to the best that the Muddy Pig has to offer. Chad answered with a wicked grin.
Gladly. Finally you've recognized my true talents.
My ancestor frowned.
Muddy Pig.
15 minutes later, we were comfortably ensconced in the warm interior of Washbrook's finest, and indeed only, tavern. I sat at an old table in the corner of the main room, Chad's favorite spot. Not that it mattered, the tavern was empty. Everyone who might have considered drinking at this time of day was occupied with the aftermath of the attack on Castle Cameron. None of the staff would have been present either, since they were likewise busy, but Chad had sent a runner for one of the hostesses to come and assist us. The waitress in question was now leaning over the table, delivering a set of 3 small glasses. She had dark hair, bound up in a practical braid, and I couldn't help but notice that she angled her body in such a way that Chad had a better view of her figure than the rest of us. That wasn't what concerned me, though.
What's this? I asked, indicating the glasses.
McDaniel's finest whiskey,
replied the waitress, Danae, with a mischievous wink that also seemed directed mainly at the huntsman.
Whiskey? Said Tyrion, the word unfamiliar to him.
They hadn't had distilled spirits in his time, I remembered, but Chad spoke first.
It's a man's drink. I figured you'd like it.
It certainly wasn't to my liking. The stuff was a guaranteed way to ruin the morrow. I usually stuck to beer or wine. Besides, Penny usually frowned on me drinking spirits. My throat grew tight, but I realized that wasn't something I needed to worry about any longer. Chad saved me from needing to comment, raising his glass.
Cheers,
he said, waiting for us to lift our own, before downing the fiery liquid in a slow swallow, relishing the taste. Tyrion followed his example, and I was gratified to see my ancestor struggle to keep from choking as the amber fluid burned his throat. I managed mine with more grace, and the burn helped me to get my thoughts back to the present. So, what did you have in mind? I asked. Danny was back and filling our glasses again before he could reply. I covered mine with one hand. Beer, please. She started to turn away, but Chad pointed at his glass and Tyrion's.
You know better than that, darling. Just leave the bottle before you fetch our worthy Countess milk.
Danae filled their glasses, casting wicked looks at the ranger as she handed him the bottle afterward. I'd been in the Muddy Pig quite a few times, but I couldn't recall her ever being so obvious before, and I wondered if anything had happened between the two of them that I was unaware of. Not my business, I told myself. The Shi'ar were fighting this enemy for millennia before they came here, began Tyrion after draining his second glass, as I'm sure you're aware. I nodded. During that time, they developed specialized Crytek for sniffing out Ensis. Considering the current situation, I think you need them, added my ancestor. In fact, I had thought about it. I'd even planned on asking him during my last visit to his island, but after the disastrous fight over Linarala, I discarded the idea. My pride had kept me from considering it again. You aren't a father tree anymore, I observed. My tree is still there, explained Tyrion. I can merge with it whenever I choose. I will produce the Crytek and find the enemy for you, if you will show me how these teleport circles of yours work. My beer had arrived, so I took a long drink while I thought over his proposal. Since the rebirth of the Shi'ar, Tyrion had never shown any interest in learning anything about modern enchanting. Then again, this was only my second time talking to him in human form. When I didn't answer right away, Tyrion smiled at my hesitation. Worried that I have some sinister ulterior motive. We aren't exactly friends, I said honestly, and after my last visit, I wasn't sure we were even allies any longer. I have a vested interest in this world, just as you do. Neither of us profits from letting Ensis have it, explained Tyrion. Danny placed two more mugs in front of him and Chad, each filled to the brim with frothy brew. What do you want to learn about teleportation enchantments? I asked. Aside from the fact they're obviously useful for a wide variety of things, I'll need them if I'm to report what the Crytek discovered to you in any reasonable time frame, said Tyrion. He lifted the beer to his lips and swallowed. His eyes widened after a second, and he took another longer drink. I thought you said this was beer. It is. I replied. Chad sneered at him. Some things have improved since your day. Good beer is a sign of an advanced society. I studied my chief huntsman with interest, noting that his accent had almost vanished. It didn't happen often, but as always, it made me wonder about his past. How much of his rustic demeanor was real, and how much was an affectation? Beer tasted nothing like this in my time, observed Tyrion, eyeing his mug with new admiration.
You can't get anything like that living as a tree, commented Chad dryly.
Tyrion snorted. I might have rethought the choice back then if we'd had this to drink. Bullshit, I thought. You had no choice. Your family rejected your twisted ideas, and your daughter stuck a knife in your back. Despite his attempts at being amiable, I had no intention of forgetting what an utter bastard my ancestor was. His eyes met mine for a moment before he turned them back to his drink. I wondered if he could guess what I was thinking. I hoped so. You haven't answered yet, said Tyrion. What do you think of my offer? Rather than speak, I used my finger to begin drawing a glowing circle in the air. I followed that with a smaller one within it, and then I began adding the runes that went between the two. I named each as I went, until I'd finished. Then I pointed out the two empty areas. The keys go here and here. One is the key of the destination circle, the other is the key that names the circle you just created. Chad looked disgusted.
Are you really going to try and teach him that here and now? I'm going to wind up sober again before I've had a chance to get drunk.
I have no desire to spend any more time in this man's presence than necessary, I said harshly. Then I proceeded to explain the formula for calculating a key to designate a new circle. I never paused or repeated myself, and when I'd finished that, I drew a finished key. This is the key for the general use circle at my castle. As soon as I was done, I let the glowing symbols fade away.
How's he supposed to remember all that rubbish? Asked Chad.
I downed the rest of my beer and gave Tyrion an appraising stare. He had the same flawless memory I did.
He'll remember. Send word to me if you find them.
Then I turned to go. The bottle of whiskey on the table was at the forefront of my mind. Chad saw me glance at it and then gave a subtle wink. I knew what he was communicating, but I doubted he knew that I had a second reason for looking at it. I had a strong urge to take it with me. I wanted nothing more than to drink myself into oblivion. Summoning my inner discipline, I left. I had too many things to do to surrender my wits, and I certainly didn't want to relax around my homicidal ancestor. In the background, I heard Chad resume his customary banter.
So, Tyrion, tell me, I know the Shi'ar elders are trees, but are you properly described as a hardwood or a softwood?
Chapter 41 The house was cold and silent as I left the room that held the teleportation circles. It was over 2,000 years old, but the walls and roof were still strong. The air was always a comfortable temperature, and despite its age, there was never a hint of dust or mold. Tyrion had laid the foundation of the Alineal House in Albemarle in a time before modern history had even begun. He had named it Albemarle, the Aerolith word for white stone. It was a bit of irony that the city was named after it, though I was one of the few people aware of that. Over the 20 centuries since that time, generations of Tyrion's descendants had built, rebuilt, expanded, and remodeled the place. Each and every stone that made up the walls was enchanted, providing the house with a timeless indestructibility. I'd first come to explore the dwelling in my youth, accompanied by my friends, Marcus, Rose, and Penny. Though it belonged to me, I'd never lived there aside from spending a few weeks now and then when I needed to be in the capital for an extended period. Consequently, I didn't have many memories in the place, and those I did have mainly consisted of moments with Marcus, Rose, and Penny, and occasionally Dorian. All who are now dead, except Rose, I thought darkly. My purpose for coming there was twofold. One, I wanted to check on the Queen and my son, Connell. If Ansys had assaulted Castle Cameron, there was every possibility that they'd also attack the capital. My second reason was that I needed a way to get to my mountain home so I could make sure that my mother and the others had escaped danger before the Keeper collapsed. I could have simply flown. I knew where my secret house was located, obviously, but it would have taken time to get there. By coming to Albemarle, I could use the portal in the Queen's Palace to access my home directly. Unlike every other dwelling or place that I frequented, there were no teleportation circles in my family's private residence. I had made a rule concerning that when I built the place. Teleportation circles were a security risk. Anyone who learned the key to a circle could make a circle to take them to it, assuming they were a mage, of course. For that reason, the only magical methods of entry to my home were the two portals I constructed, one leading to my castle, now destroyed, and the newer one that connected to a closet in the Queen's residence. A portal is more secure. It can be deactivated. It's also defensible, whereas you never know when someone might appear on a circle. That was why the teleportation circles leading to Castle Cameron were all located in the yard outside the keep, within a special building that had guards watching it around the clock. Descending the stairs to the first floor, I couldn't help but feel a lonely emptiness sink into my bones. It wasn't something I'd felt there before, but now, thinking of my absent friends, it was inescapable. I didn't linger, and once I opened the door to the street, I was glad I hadn't. My nose immediately picked up the scent of smoke. Things hadn't been quiet in the capital. The door to my factor's office across the road was closed and barred, though with my mage sight, I could sense David Summerfield and his paramour Sarah Beckins hiding within. Farther in, I could detect more people hiding in one of the storerooms. A family, I'll wager. Crossing over, I knocked.
Who is it?
Came David's tense voice.
It's me, I replied. Your employer. Can you let me in? After several minutes of shifting and moving furniture, David finally opened the door a crack, peering out suspiciously.
Is it over?
I have no idea, I told him honestly. I just arrived. Tell me what happened.
Fire, chaos, metal monsters, terror in the night, muttered David. I don't understand any of it. The city hasn't been safe.
Is that why you have Sarah and her family barricaded in with you? I asked. David blushed.
They had nowhere safe to go.
Relax, I told him. I approve of your caution. Can you give me a better description of what's going on? He shook his head.
Sarah's father said he hasn't seen anything like this since the Godstone War. I didn't see much myself. We locked ourselves in early on, but we heard plenty. Thunder, explosions, men screaming.
I nodded and turned away.
Where are you going?
He asked worriedly.
I have to find the Queen, I answered. Go ahead and put your barricade back in place. I'll send word later if the city is safe.
Reinforcing my personal shield, I took hold of the wind and lifted myself into the air. From high above, it was readily apparent that Albemarle had been through interesting times. Thin plumes of smoke rose from 9 different spots, areas that on closer inspection appeared to have burned down the day before. Thankfully, there weren't any active blazes that I could find. At the center of the city lay the Royal Palace, and like Castle Cameron, one of its exterior walls had been destroyed, though the damage was more centralized. In the streets, I spotted several tortoises that appeared to have been battered into immobility. Worried, I flew to the main gate and approached slowly on foot. I had no desire to create a panic by flying in unannounced. There were several guardsmen on duty, and they bade me to wait. I hadn't expected that, but their intent became clear when Carwin, Ariadne's dragon, appeared a few minutes later. The massive dragon sniffed at me before studying me with wary eyes.
Lower your shield, he said with a gravelly voice.
That surprised me.
You know it's me, Carwin. You can recognize my Aethar.
His voice grew deeper and more threatening.
Lower your shield or prepare to face me. No one enters without being inspected.
I did so. A minute later, he announced,
He's all right. Let him in.
Then he left, returning to whatever he'd been doing before my arrival. Inside the palace, I saw some signs of damage, but nothing like what had happened to Castle Cameron. Servants and soldiers moved to and fro in a frenzy of activity, reminding me of a hive of bees that had been disturbed. Most of them ignored me as I headed for the throne room. Benchley met me at the doors.
Your Excellency, the Queen has left instructions in the event you appear. Bear with me for a moment, and I will announce you.
I waited, studying the hallway while he went in. Everything appeared normal, but my eyes picked out some suspicious dark stains on the rose granite walls. Either the cleaning staff had gotten lax, or someone had made a considerable mess recently. The doors opened after only a minute, and I was ushered in. Ariadne sat at the end of a long table that belonged elsewhere. The throne room was normally used only for holding court and certain ceremonial affairs, and should have held only one seat, that of the monarch. 2 men stood on either side and slightly behind her, Sir Harold and my son Connell. Harold was in full armor and bearing arms. His eyes roved around the room as though he expected an attack from every quarter. His new dragon sat on his shoulders, its tail curling around his neck and trailing down his chest. My attention was on Connell, though. I'd sent him to protect the Queen, but I hadn't expected him to be standing guard next to her person like this during what was obviously a meeting. He looked almost as alert as Harold, but what worried me was the fact that he leaned heavily against an oak staff. Thick linen bandages wrapped his abdomen, and I could see stains where blood had soaked through. Since I was distracted by my son's appearance, it took me a moment to register the people who sat at the table with the Queen. Rose was on one side, and Prince Leomund on the other. The two of them were both immaculately dressed. However, while Rose sat straight and attentive, the Prince Consort lounged in his chair as though he were at an afternoon social. In contrast to the two of them, Duke Cantley sat in the chair beside Leomund, haggard and disheveled. Functionaries, primarily higher-level military officers, took up the rest of the chairs. They sat on Rose's side of the table, since most of them answered to her. Everyone stared at me as though I'd grown horns, so I broke the silence first. What happened? There were several sharp intakes of breath, and Prince Leomund sneered,
Have you no need for your queen?
Even Rose was frowning at me, though Ariadne's face remained carefully neutral. Shit. It had been a long time since I'd been to court, and I hadn't expected to face such a formal situation. I genuflected, addressing Ariadne. Your Majesty, forgive my rudeness. Recent events have made me careless.
You are forgiven, Count Cameron, said Ariadne graciously. Please take a seat and attend to us. We have need of your counsel.
You are too merciful, Ariadne, said Leomund, staring at me with a look of disgust. This cur hasn't had the grace to attend court in years, and now he marches in as though he owns the place. I am at a loss. Where were you during our recent crisis, Lord Cameron? Would you care to account for yourself?
Leo, you go too far,
warned Ariadne. Duke Cantley decided to speak up.
I too would like an explanation, Your Majesty. From what we have heard, Lord Cameron may be directly responsible for this assault. He should make a good accounting of himself.
I glanced at Ariadne, waiting until she nodded before I answered. My estate has also suffered a serious attack.
A feeble excuse, Lord Cameron, interrupted the Prince Consort. Lady Hightower has already informed us that you were absent from the defense of your land.
Patience had never been my strongest suit, and my grief and fatigue weren't helping my self-control. Angry, I lashed out. And I suppose your highness spends every minute in the capital guarding the crown of Lothian? Or perhaps your hunting lodge was also destroyed? Is that why you seem so out of sorts today?
Rose's eyes were warning me to restrain myself, though she showed no other outward sign. The prince consort was out of his chair now, enraged. You dare speak to me so?
I didn't bother standing. To do so would have implied the pompous prick represented a threat. I will show you the same courtesy and respect you have shown me, your highness. Then I turned to face the Queen, ignoring him. May I continue, Your Majesty? Leoman's throat issued a strangled sound that probably represented outrage. He was too mad to speak. Ariadne waved at him to sit.
Enough, Leomund. This is not the time to be squabbling amongst ourselves. Take your seat and let him continue.
The Prince's eyes shot daggers in her direction, but he sat down.
As I was saying, Your Majesty, Castle Cameron was also attacked, very likely at the same time as whatever happened here. From what I saw as I came here, the source of the attacks was Ansis, the same enemy that caused so much trouble in Dunbar a few months ago, I explained.
Duke Cantley broke in.
What is this Ansis you speak of?
It stands for Artificial Neural Symbiote Integrative System, I replied.
And what is that supposed to mean? Demanded the Duke.
Not much to us, I said frankly. It's an artificial life form. A self-replicating machine entity, devoid of the force that animates living creatures in our world.
The Prince Consort jumped in then. And you thought it was a good idea to attack this Ansis without consulting your queen first? Your insult to this entity has cost the lives of many good people.
How did he know we attacked Ansis? I'd explicitly told Connell not to reveal that information before sending him to protect the queen. His accusation caught me off guard as I tried to decide how to reply. But the Prince Consort didn't plan on giving me the luxury to think. He pressed his attack.
You didn't think we would discover what you'd done. You probably also think that the crown will forever be dependent upon you and your vassals for magical assistance as well. If it hadn't been for Tyrion's timely warning and assistance, we might not be sitting here now to listen to you lie about it.
Tyrion, what did he have to do with this? Struggling to regain my composure, I spoke up. It might be easier for me to understand your accusations if I knew what happened here.
You'd like that, wouldn't you, traitor? It would make it far easier to construct a believable lie, wouldn't it? Hissed the Prince Consort.
At that point I came close to using my magic to seal his mouth shut, but the Queen spoke before I lost my temper.
Leomund, don't make me warn you again. Lord Cameron has been a loyal servant to the Crown for many years.
Then the doors of the throne room opened and Benchley stepped in.
The Duke of the Western Isles has returned, Your Majesty, as well as Lord Galen.
Please show him in,
responded Ariadne.
Duke of the Western Isles? Who was that? I knew the name and title of every nobleman in Lothian, not to mention Dunbar and Gododdin, and I'd never heard of the Duchy of the Western Isles. I craned my head over one shoulder to see who would enter.
Tyrion and Lernial marched toward the table, a faint smirk on his lips when he saw my look of confusion. Beside him was Gareth Galen. The Prince Consort's brazen attitude toward me was beginning to make more sense, though I still had no idea what was going on. The two new arrivals bowed deeply to the Queen, and then took seats at the table across from me. Tyrion watched me with a challenging gaze, while Gareth ignored my presence completely. Ariadne turned to Rose.
Lady Hightower, would you be so kind as to summarize recent events for the Count de Cameron?
With a regal dignity I would never come close to possessing, Lady Rose stood and addressed the table.
As you wish, Your Majesty. In the small hours of the morning yesterday, assassins hidden among the royal guard broke into your bedroom. The men are presumed to have been controlled by Ansis, the entity the Count was just describing. Their attempt on your life might have succeeded if it hadn't been for the timely intervention of Cornel Eluniel and your knight, Sir Harold. Shortly after that attack, a still undetermined number of metal monsters invaded the city, destroying several homes and damaging the palace wall. Two of them were dealt with by your dragon, two others by Sir Egan and Sir Thomas, but the bulk of the enemy force was stopped by the Lord Eluniel, the recently appointed Duke of the Western Isles, finished Rose.
That meant Tyrion had been in the capital before he'd come to visit me. What were you doing here? I demanded of my ancestor. Tyrion smiled innocently.
I came to check on my house and to offer the queen my support. I explained my plan for discerning the whereabouts of Ansis and swore fealty to Her Majesty. Unfortunately, I was too late to discover the hidden assassins among her guardsmen, but I'm grateful I was here to render my assistance in turning back the assault on the city itself.
Your house? My voice tapered off as I realized he was referring to my house, which had originally been his. He nodded.
I hope you don't mind, but as I'm your elder by many generations, and I did lay the foundations, the house is rightfully mine, regardless of my new title.
You should be proud, Lord Cameron, said Duke Cantley. Yesterday your family provided two heroes in the service of Lothian, your ancestor and your son.
Learman sneered. It's a shame you didn't see fit to aid them since you knew the attack was imminent. Ariadne nodded.
We are especially grateful for your son, Sir Connell. Without him, I fear my life would have been forfeit.
My eyes grew wider. Sir Connell. Rose jumped in to save me from my confusion.
The Queen has conferred a knighthood on your son in recognition of his bravery.
It was too much to take in all at once. Congratulations, Connell, I said. But as I glanced around the table, I felt alone. Rose's eyes were distant, or perhaps she was trying to give me a warning. Ariadne's face was neutral. She was constrained by her role. The others, with the exception of my son and Sir Harold, seemed hostile. I couldn't stay there any longer. Rising to my feet, I bowed and excused myself.
I beg permission to take my leave, Your Majesty. My son is needed at home for an urgent family matter.
I wanted to tell her about Penny's death, but I didn't want to announce it in front of a hostile audience, especially not with Connell present. He needed to hear it somewhere private.
You have yet to explain yourself, Cameron,
challenged the Prince Consort.
And I shall, I barked, but not to you, and not now.
Connell spoke up.
I'd rather remain, Father. The Queen needs me.
Thankfully, Ariadne came to my aid.
You have our permission to withdraw, Lord Cameron. Sir Connell, attend to your father. You may return later. The danger has passed for now.
I bowed to my cousin, turned, and strode quickly from the room without looking back. With my mage sight, I saw my son reluctantly follow, along with Lady Rose, after whispering into the Queen's ear. Outside the throne room, Rose's composed features relaxed.
Have Matthew and Graham returned?
Not yet, I replied hollowly. She was worried about her son, and I couldn't blame her for that. I wanted to tell her about Penny, but my tongue seemed stuck. Connell was staring at me, frustration in his eyes, probably wondering why I dragged him away from his moment of glory.
Mort, I know a lot has happened, but after that attack the other night, shouldn't you be checking on them before coming here?
Said Rose critically.
Frustration, rage, and sorrow warred for first place in my heart. I wanted to make sure you and my mother were safe.
That's what I should have said, but when I opened my mouth it was my bile that spoke.
After what just happened in there, I'm thinking I should have come here sooner. The palace is turning into a nest of vipers.
Rose's face blanched, hearing the reproach in my voice.
That was unexpected, I will agree. I don't know what Tyrion is planning yet, but it's obvious that...
It's obvious I could use a friend in there, I interrupted. Too bad there were none to be found. Now she was angry.
I know you're not that stupid, Mordecai. You have to control your emotions, or your opponents will use them against you. I tried to warn you, but you insisted on acting like a child. Performances like the one you just put on won't win you friends. They'll alienate your allies. Do you have any idea what the Queen is dealing with right now?
Inside, I was falling apart. Only my simmering anger kept me from breaking down. But I didn't need an argument with Rose. As far as I knew, she might be the only friend I had left. I don't need a lecture on political strategy right now, Rose. I turned my back on her and started walking. I'll contact you as soon as I hear from Graham. She was too proud to chase after me. I'd been counting on that. Behind me, Connell apologized to her and then hurried to catch up. I led him through the palace, heading for the royal residence. Once we were there, the guards stationed outside started to challenge me, but when they saw Connell, they relaxed. The irony wasn't lost on me. They trusted my son more than they did me. He's the Queen's champion, I observed silently. Once inside, I headed directly for the hidden portal, but I had to cross a sitting room where Elise Thornbear and my mother were having tea. I smiled when they saw Connell and me enter the room.
"We were just talking about you," said my mother.
She had Humphrey in her lap, running her fingers through his soft fur while he slept.
"What happened at the castle? Is everyone safe?"
Both of the older women, as well as Connell, were staring at me, and I struggled to find an answer. A shadow crossed my mother's face as I hesitated.
"Is Irene all right?"
she asked. "Yes," I said finally. "She's fine. The keep was badly damaged, but Irene is well. She held things together long enough for most of the people to evacuate."
"Thank goodness for that," said my mother. "Things have been just as exciting around here. Did Connell tell you the news? He's been made a knight."
She was beaming at her grandson with visible pride.
"I can't wait to tell Penelope. She'll be so proud."
I came close to losing it then, but somehow I held it in. "Mum, listen, I'm really tired, and I still have a lot to do. I'll be back tomorrow, and we'll have a long talk. Is that all right?" She could sense that something was wrong, but Meredith withheld her questions.
"Of course. You're an important man. Don't let me hold you up. You can tell me everything then."
"Thanks," I told her. And before Elise could add anything, I left. Chapter 42.
"Dad,"
asked Connell, as we stepped out of the portal and into the quiet of our home,
"what's wrong?"
My maid sight had already detected several other familiar presences in the dining room. "Let's say hello to the others first," I told him. Elaine, Karen, and Linarala sat around the table, making an impromptu meal of some cheese and old bread. Karen grinned widely at me when we entered.
"Have we got some news for you?"
"You were successful, then," I asked. She nodded, then looked at Linarala.
"Tell him, Lin. Nerillianthe agreed to give us access. What's more, she allowed us to transport most of the writings here, so we can study them at our leisure,"
said the young Shiha. It was good news, but I couldn't muster the enthusiasm I'd felt a few days ago. "That's wonderful," I said glumly. Elaine's eyes narrowed.
"There's something wrong."
Rather than answer her question, I asked, "Have you been back to the castle?" Elaine shook her head.
"No, we only returned an hour ago. Karen's been busy teleporting back and forth to bring the Shiha sculptures here."
"Let me fetch Irene, then we can talk," I told them. "Give me a few minutes." Then I headed for the kitchen and the door that led to the back garden.
"The door to the castle is the other way,"
observed Linarala. I stopped. "The portal is damaged. I'll have to make a circle." Karen swallowed hurriedly.
"I can take you then."
Waving at her to stay seated, I shook my head. "We'll need a circle to use for the next few days anyway. Finish your food. You deserve a rest." Once I was outside, I cleared a section of ground and used my cloth stencil to create a temporary circle before adding the necessary keys to allow me to travel to the transfer house in the castle courtyard. Rather than simply use it, though, I took the additional step of burning the symbols into the earth, making the circle somewhat more permanent. Since it was etched into the soil, it still wasn't extremely durable. A hard rain could wash it away, but it would probably last a few days at least. Exerting my will, I teleported. The transfer house was empty, but as soon as I stepped outside, I spotted my children. Matthew, Moira, and Graham were talking with Captain Draper in the yard. They looked tired and dirty, but their stances spoke of confidence and accomplishment, so I guessed they'd been successful. Matthew gave me a rare smile.
"It worked!" "By that, he means we blew them to tiny bits without destroying the world," added Graham jovially, "something everyone conveniently forgot to tell me was a possibility before we left."
My eyes found Captain Draper's, and he shook his head faintly. "Where's Irene?" I asked.
"In the barracks, checking on the men," said the captain.
Meanwhile, I could feel Moira studying me. She'd already picked up on the dark pool hanging over us, and then she looked at the captain.
Don't, I said to her silently. Keep your mind closed. I'll explain after we're all together.
The captain sent a runner to tell Irene we were here. Apparently the others had shown up only minutes before me. I began constructing a new circle inside the transfer house to allow us to teleport back to our home. Matthew joined me, offering to help.
What's wrong? He asked quietly, having seen the odd look on his sister's face. Wait until we get home, I promised.
Irene showed up a few minutes later, and as soon as the circle was finished, we teleported back. By the time we entered the house, Moira's face had taken on a somber look. Irene was shielding her thoughts, but her emotional pain was painfully evident. Connell and the others glanced up from the table when we entered.
Welcome back.
A multitude of hellos were exchanged, but they died away quickly as everyone waited for me to speak. Then Matthew spoke.
Where's Mum?
Connell chimed in.
I thought she was with Irene.
At the mention of her name, my youngest daughter's eyes began to well with tears.
No,
shouted Moira, her eyes wide with shock as she stared at her sister.
That's not true. It can't be true.
Matthew sat down, putting his face in his hands. He'd already connected the dots, but Connell was still confused.
What's going on? Connell asked. Why is everyone upset?
Your mother was badly injured during the attack on Castle Cameron, I began. Without looking up, Matthew broke in.
I told you we should wait. We should have kept more people here.
Irene was still here,
said Connell, somewhat unhelpfully in my opinion. Irene was already sobbing while Moira held her.
It was my fault. I should have protected her, but I couldn't,
she yelled, the guilt in her voice wrenching at my heart. Connell looked back at me, ignoring her outburst.
How badly injured?
I couldn't meet his eyes as I shook my head.
She didn't survive. Because you couldn't wait to think up a better plan, said Matthew, his words cold and hard.
Irene shoved herself away from her older sister, glaring at Matthew.
Leave him alone. None of this was his fault. Don't you think he's hurting too?
The truth is what it is, muttered Matthew.
My oldest son stood, pushing away from the table.
Just shut up.
Then he walked away, heading toward his room. Connell called after him.
Wait, we haven't heard what happened.
Doesn't matter, does it? Said Matthew bitterly. We know why she died, but how of it hardly matters. She's still dead.
Then he was gone. Karen rose and followed him to his room.
Why does he have to be an arsehole?
Growled Moira, channeling her sadness into irritation with her brother. Irene left crying, heading for her own room. Connell went with her.
Wait, Rennie!
Moira remained, staring deeply into my eyes.
You should go with them, I suggested. They need you more than I do.
My oldest daughter hugged me, squeezing me so hard that my ribs protested.
I doubt that,
she replied. But then she went after them anyway, leaving me alone with Elaine, Graham, and Linerala. Elaine and Graham sat silent, their faces numb with shock. But Linerala was composed, her features expressionless. Oh, so I thought, until I noticed a solitary tear making its way down her cheek. When the Shi'ar girl met my eyes, she looked lost.
Why?
Whispered Linerala. I dragged her to her feet and hugged her, struggling with my own tears as I answered.
I don't know.
Does my mother know yet? Asked Graham. I shook my head.
No.
Why not? I gave him a short summary of what had happened at the palace, ending with,
I was angry, upset, and aggravated. I wound up picking a fight with your mother. After that, I just couldn't say it.
Graham sighed. That was dumb. Silently, I agreed.
Dumb shit. Someone has to do it. Might as well be me. It's hard work, but it makes the rest of you look better.
Elaine mumbled to herself, staring off into space.
I still haven't gotten over my father.
And she put her face down on the table. Graham gave me a brief rundown of what happened during his mission with Moira and Matthew. While I'd been walking the road to Lancaster, the three of them had flown from Cantley over the forest, seeking the Ungol village. The first phase of their plan had gone smoothly. They'd located the village, and with some help from Moira's manipulative abilities, they'd managed to walk into it with very little resistance. Unfortunately, the village was indeed infested, though it was doubtful even the inhabitants were aware of their status as hosts to a machine parasite. Matthew had used the Fool's Tesseract, but had kept the settings conservative to avoid the risk of an explosion in excess of what was desired. The result was a tremendous blast that destroyed the